arranged for Dave to send this care package with autographed books and a letter to Paolo and...
You hear it said a lot, but it is true. The profession of teaching is a true calling of the heart. We're going to talk about that next.
And now, it's time for another edulicious episode of the Bentley Brothers Podcast, bringing you what's current and what works in education. Here are your hosts, Scott and Tim Bentley.
Bentley Brothers, Bentley, Bentley Brothers, bringing education information like no other. Bentley Brothers, yep. Bentley, Bentley Brothers, bringing education information like no other. Yep.
First name Bentley, last name Brothers, bringing education information like no other.
That's right, Scott. We're going to have some fun today, man. I can tell that already, can't you?
Yeah, I mean, it really is close to April Fool's.
Well, we got two April Fools with one doctor that's going to be on the show today, and he is a lot of fun. We got Dr. Brad Gustafson with us, and we'll introduce him next. But first, we want to thank Advancement Courses for sponsoring today's show. Stay tuned at the end of the show for how to save 20% on online professional development. I'm excited, Scott.
Tim, and I go to that site now and just check it out. I mean, it's so easy to sort what you're looking for. You click down on a drop-down menu, you pick the state, and it tells you which university you credit for. I mean, this thing is really legit, and it is going to make teachers' lives much easier when they're having to go through the process of getting those units and bump it up on the pay scale or whatever professional development they need to do. It's awesome. It's well-designed.
So here we go with Dr. Brad Gustafson. He's an educator, speaker, author. He's a National School Boards Association 20 to watch, Minnesota Principal of the Year. He serves on Scholastic's Principal Advisory Board and is also an advisor with Future Ready Schools. His newest book, Reclaiming Our Calling, is already creating a child-centered ruckus. Is that right, Brad?
Woo! Everywhere we go.
Brad, how do you have time to like eat?
Oh, I love eating. I have to say, this pre-show, I feel like I have nowhere to go but down, because that pre-show we just did was probably the most fun I've ever had on a podcast. So thank you for that. I hope I can keep the momentum going here. You guys are awesome.
Yeah, we record that, but...
Oh, well. And I don't know, the bumper, I was listening to your show last week and reminded once again, I honestly think you guys have the best bumpers in the business. And I actually reached out to you and asked about them. And lo and behold, Oliver Shinkton, I guess, helped create those for you. No surprise there. He's just a creative genius, but good stuff. Sets the mood.
Or at least a friend of his named Big Ron.
Yes, I know. I know him well.
All right, Brad. So, man, I'm excited to talk to you about your new book and just pick your brain on all the great ideas that you have for teachers. So why don't you get us started? Give us an overview of why do teachers want to read your book? I mean, Scott and I are totally into student-centered, not teacher-centered, student-centered classrooms. And it sounds like I'm sure a lot of our listeners are into student-centered classrooms as well.
Sure.
Why would these teachers want to pick up your book?
Sure. Well, the biggest way I can explain it is that the intent or the goal is to help us navigate this tension that many of us are experiencing in school, where we show up to do something that we love and we're called to do, but oftentimes we have to check our own gifts at the door, and to some extent maybe are feeling pigeonholed, or you know, whether it's funding or just not being able to bring our best self or ideas, because we have one thing, or we've been told one thing matters more than everything else. So the book is intended to help people confront that conflict and give real practical ideas and solutions that people can try to help kids achieve at a high level, while also not having to pretend that we're somebody different than we really are.
And Brad, when you wrote this book, were you thinking, hey, I'm targeting like the mid-career teacher, all teachers, the teacher that's kind of, you know, teaching has become incredibly stressful. Tim's been teaching for what, 30 plus years, me 25 years. And I've definitely seen a change in the amount of pressure that we're under. And it's hard to sometimes pinpoint. I know it's self-pressure for a lot of us because we want to do the best we can. Mm-hmm. And then when we get criticized, that makes it even more difficult. And and demanding. So where did you gear this book for as far as like career teachers?
Yeah, well, there's a specific segment of the population that I did not gear the book to. So if you are somebody who believes that good teaching and learning starts with content and accountability, like as a starting place, that this book will not resonate. It's really geared towards people who value connectedness and relationships as a starting point for learning. And it's not to say that accountability and content don't play an important role, but that's just not the starting point. So to answer your question directly, I would say that even pre-career teachers, I mean, I hope my kids' future teachers come across, if not this book, other things that help them connect meaningfully to things that matter a lot in teaching and learning. And just that, like you said earlier, that really student-centric lens and how we do that. I don't think there's an age or an experience level that's tied to the book. It's more about a belief system.
Hey, Brad, the subtitle of your book is Hold On to the Heart, Mind, and Hope of Education. What were you thinking when you made that subtitle there?
I was thinking about meeting people where they're at. I think oftentimes, and I'll put myself in this too, I compare myself to the best of what people are putting out there, whether it's online or at conferences, and just get inundated with like where I need to improve or what I'm not doing, because everyone is sharing their ideas. And then at school, seeing like the important expectations that are placed upon educators, and we don't take those expectations lightly. I mean, we dedicate our lives to helping kids succeed, so that's no joke. But it all can just kind of weigh on us in different ways, whether it's how we perceive ourselves or just getting in the grind of a hyper focus on metrics. So the subtitle is really like meeting you and our colleagues and myself right where I am and saying, you know what, I'm good enough right now, and together we can do even better. But what I don't want to do is like withhold the best part of me, because when I bring my heart to work, our team will always benefit, at least through positive intentions and by me being vulnerable and probably making mistakes too. But when the heart isn't there and the relationships are kind of an afterthought because we're focused on other things at the expense of things that matter most, then we come into issues. So the tagline to the book or the subtitle tries to encapsulate like things that really, really matter or should matter to all of us.
So Brad, you're a principal at what level site are you at?
So we're K-5.
K-5. And yep. I know that principals are under a tremendous amount of pressure from community, from leadership, district leadership, from teachers. Like, you're kind of at the center point of all the pressure points. How do you keep that relationship focus with those pressures kind of coming down on you as a leader?
Yeah, that's an interesting thing. And I don't know if people care. So I kind of feel like at times I'm a middle manager. I mean, within the building, it might seem like the principal kind of has the autonomy to say and decide and do really whatever she or he wants. But really, it's this huge team effort where the community is part of the team. The district's part of the team. There are just so many important voices. Students are obviously part of the team. So really, what I try to do is just be a good listener and try to have my finger on the pulse of what teachers are sharing is important to them and what they're needing or what they're getting that we want to protect and keep have happening. I mean, that's just as important as advocating for things that aren't happening yet. But really, it just boils down to, and this isn't rocket science, so it might disappoint people. It's not super flashy, but just listening. And I've heard people say this before, and I mentioned it in the book, but tuning into the conversation. So I say the conversation is the work. And the times in my career where I've lost sight of that, or if my to-do list has kind of usurped other important things like conversations and relationships, things just feel hectic and don't make a lot of sense. I remember real quick, I was in my first principal job, greener than green. So God bless that staff for kind of enduring me trying to figure things out. But I was cruising through the hall and I had an agenda, and I don't remember what I was going to do, but a little girl needed help, I think tying her shoes or something like that. And I stopped and I assisted her. And then I, you know, was ready to get going on whatever mission I was on. And she just stopped and looked at me and said, I'm glad you're here. Just a heartfelt, like, I'm so glad you were here. And it just in that moment hit me like, sometimes the things I think are important probably aren't as important as where people need me to be. And sometimes that's just available. And again, that's not rocket science. That's things that people live out every day. But that's why we have to, I don't know if fight's the right word, but that's why we have to have conversations like this. Like, how can we protect that time and the heart of this work while we're nurturing minds?
Right on. Now, everybody loves a good story. That was a good story.
That was great.
And, your book is has been praised for having some really good stories in it. Can you relate one of those stories to us that seems to be resonating with the audience of your book?
Sure. It definitely is a book of stories. And I'd say it's actually mostly stories with then some kind of teaching points and strategies to help make a difference that are interspersed. But right from the very beginning, the foreword is written by a student of ours, our former student now. And so I remember seeing him, and his name is Paolo. I can mention it because he's helped author the book, or at least the foreword. But I remember him, Paolo, in kindergarten, and just his teachers noticing his talent. And he was a talented artist, and they would celebrate him. And I can just picture moments where that was happening. And I think in any given moment, at least me personally, you don't always understand the gravity of it. You might think it's cool and go home and talk about it and be like, wow, you know, Mrs. Westman did this and so-and-so did this. And that was so awesome. It made a difference. But in totality, and this is one of the blessings of being a principal, over a 5 or 6 year period, you get to see heaps of blessings and teachers focusing and noticing students' passions to the point where you get to see over the long haul what difference that makes in kids' lives. Not that teachers don't see it over the course of the year and beyond when kids come back, because you certainly do. But it's just a neat and a different vantage point, because sometimes I have time, if I'm being honest, to bop into situations that teachers, when they're load bearing in a homeroom class, they might not be able to be a part of. So fast forward with Paolo, you know, through the years, I remember in fourth grade, same exact thing. Teachers are celebrating his talents, and we had gotten him connected to, we had a author day. So an author came out, and the author found out by virtue of one of Paolo's teachers that Paolo loved Dave Pilkey, a children's book author. So this author was friends with Dave and arranged for Dave to send this care package with autographed books and a letter to Paolo and stuff. And we were able to surprise Paolo with it. And we got it on video just to see his reaction. And his friends and his whole class knew that Paolo loved this author. So they were like hugging him in the video and celebrating, and they knew how meaningful it was. The only reason they knew it was meaningful was because that was celebrated and nurtured by a teacher, right? Had it not been recognized in a point of emphasis over the course of the year, no one would have really cared that much other than just kind of getting random mail. So fast forward now a couple more years to today, where Paolo writes a foreword to the book and is actually published, and his art, I won't show it to you because this is a podcast, but he did some really incredible work. When I have the chance, actually before this book even, sometimes I'll share with educators a little bit about Paolo and some other nuances with his journey. And I've said in the past, you know, mark my words, this kid is going to be published someday. And now in this strange sense, I think it counts when you publish a foreword in a book. That I think that means you're published, right? So it actually kind of happens sooner than later. So that's just an instance. I think it hits the right vibe with what the book is all about, just seeing school through kids' eyes, and how by us holding on to not only our heart, but noticing and seeing what kids are really passionate about and carving out a space for that in this environment where they're also learning reading and math and other things at a really high level, you just never know what'll happen over the long haul.
Yeah, and I think about that parent connection too, and I think about kids like Paolo that sometimes their parents don't even are unable to see those talents. And when a teacher brings that to light with them, and they're like, oh yeah, you know, I didn't really think about it, I'm so busy with my life. You can only open up this like amazing relationship even with parents. Is there anything else teachers can do to foster better relationships with parents in this?
Sure. I'll give you one quick thing, but first I want to circle back to what you said about the parents. The neat thing about the foreword is Paolo's mom actually agreed to do like a paragraph or two to precede her son's foreword. So it's one of those rare combinations where you can hear a mom share her heart for her kid, some school experiences and from different countries that she was in. And then it kind of culminates with her son and amplifying his voice. So that's kind of a cool thing. So but as far as
the forward to the forward,
Yeah, exactly. The pre-forward. It's kind of like Star Wars. Here's the thing, and tell me what you guys think about this, but as a dad of three kids, and then as a principal of 815 kids, the thing that I've noticed is the most powerful connector with parents. It's not even necessarily the direct communication, although that's important with them. It's parents appreciate when you see and know their child. So if you're a new teacher listening or a principal, if you focus 90% of your efforts on seeing and knowing that child, not just how they show up and the sports jersey they have on and kind of cheering for the same team, but matters of the heart and really what's on their mind, what they're daydreaming about in school, whether that be Fortnite or drawing or whatever else, and actually valuing that. When you show up to parents for conferences or just casual conversations in the hall, you're at a whole new level. And just all it takes is a little reference, and just for them, you know, you'll see it. And you guys have probably seen this too. It's like they're a little bit taken aback, and they're like, dang, he gets it. He sees my child, and he's, you know, that's where it becomes and feels more like a calling than a job. Because we do lots of jobs, and this work has lots of jobs, but we're really called to know our kids and help them kind of be more than they could even dream to be before they meet us, at least.
Yeah, I mean, what's this Fortnite thing you speak of?
Yeah. I know, it's something about, actually, I'm not going to do it. I'm
Don't
not
do it. No, and Brad, I feel that a lot, because, you know, I remember taking my son to kindergarten and seeing the teacher say hi to me and then get down and say, hi, what's your name? And like have that conversation. I'm like, okay, it's going to be all right. This is going to be a good year. I could tell she was solely focused on the kids. And yeah, she addressed me, you know, with a greeting. But like, I was like, that's the kind of teacher I want. The teacher that is really caring for my child, yep. which was really cool.
So when I sit in on our curriculum nights and awesome teacher presentations and stuff, it's funny because teachers share amazing content. I mean, they know their stuff, but I can't help but think there are other people in the room like me that they're just, I think they're just looking for, is it going to be okay? Is my kid going to be okay? And it's a different, it's not about social studies. It's about like, are they going to love and protect my kid and help them learn, and appreciate the quirks and things like that. I think that's, I know I have that feeling often when I show up for my kids' events, like that's really what I care about. We'll figure out the social studies over the course of the year. And I don't mean to, again, minimize content or accountability, but it goes back to what does it really start with? You know, if you just show up before the school year and you're hitting social studies really hard and showing the scope and sequence, I can't help but think you're going to lose some parents.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons a few years back we started flipping our back to school night, because all that content stuff can be put online. And we wanted to focus that night on relationship and getting to know the parents and spending time just talking to them and letting them get to know us as teachers. And that's been a really powerful place to be is when there's time to actually build those relationships and listen and time for those things and to put some of those other things like, hey, enjoy this at home or at work on your own time. But when you come here, let's make it about us talking and being people.
Scott, it's funny you say that, because when I, so over the, this is my ninth year here as principal, and I've always tried to really help create efficient structures that support teachers and honor their time, because then they have more time and energy to give to kids, which is what they, you know, are called to do. But I know I've made mistakes and I've maybe over prioritized that. And you reminded me, our open house, we had made it so, I'm going to do an air quote thing here, we had made it so value added that we had, you know, the curriculum presentations, we pulled the kids out separate from their parents and kind of entertained and took care of them so parents could get some content. We did some anti-bullying stuff. I mean, this is, we meet the teacher. This was all in like a one and a half hour window. And boy, was it efficient. We knocked a ton of things out of the park in that one thing. And I think it probably did kind of honor people's time, but it got to the point where we lost sight of the people who were showing up. So we went to exactly what you did. And we started flipping our open house night and sharing some personal videos. And that way people could get excited. Families could get excited about who their teacher is going to be before ever, you know, setting foot in our school. And just by simplifying and chopping off everything that didn't matter, for at least for that first encounter, the feedback has been so positive.
Yeah, you know, speaking of that first encounter, I'm sure we've all heard, we've been around a while, the old don't smile until Christmas thing, right?
Be I don't believe, does anyone Halloween. Really say that?
They said it to me.
Did
well,
they really?
Like, I had it said to me when I was.
And people still talk about that. I was just in a Twitter chat the other day, and someone was mentioning that. And I think I even responded, like, are people really, really saying that? Because it seems so off base.
Well, and I think that there are, even if that's not said explicitly, there's so many I know there are teachers who feel like they can't really, they need to show the kids that they mean business on day one and that they have their standards in place. And there's not going to be any goofing around in my class this year, you know, that kind of a message that they want to get across. And I think what that does is that now the kids are, you know, they don't like school on day one. They don't like their teacher. They go home to their parents and they say, oh, it's so scary. You know, I don't like. And now their parents are like, oh, great. My kid's going to hate school this year. Instantly, now you've got the parent and the kid that's against you.
Uphill battle.
The very first day, and you just started a battle. I mean, my goal the first day is to have the kids go home and say, I love school. I love my teacher. You know, it's like, it's not about me, them loving me, but it's about them buying in and being ready to actually make some progress because of that relationship that I started on the first day, you know? Yeah.
Exactly. Like, why we have to ask ourselves, why do we want our kids to rise to the occasion, whatever that looks like, behaving well, engaging, creating, innovating? Is it because they're slightly scared of us or discipline or consequences? Or is it because we want them to want to do that because they feel seen and appreciated and respected in a safe environment to take risks, fail, and where they actually want to strive to do the right thing? I mean, I'll take the latter every single day of the week.
Totally.
Well, it's that control-based, right, Tim? It's that control-based versus student-centered.
Yep. And I have to believe, and the book goes back to this too, it doesn't disparage teachers. It's like meets them where they're at. We do the best we can with what we have. I don't think anyone wakes up wanting to intimidate a kid or not be responsive. I think honestly, people under stress, we do things that it doesn't represent our best selves. So how then can we manage that for ourselves and one another? What strategies might we employ where we can bring our own passions to work and we can begin to thrive? Because when we're thriving, we're much more equipped to help kids thrive. When we're miserable and stressed out, it's really difficult to put on a front and have kids just feel super safe and like taking risks. There has to be a balance. I feel like a Star Wars reference here. It's eluding me, but the force has to be balanced.
Absolutely. All right. Well, Brad, you know, we could talk to you about this stuff all day, but we're going to have to switch gears with you right now and have a little different kind of fun. So you are a distinguished principal in Minnesota with a new book that we, of course, know and we've been talking about, entitled Reclaiming Our Calling. But today what we're going to do with you for a little game is we're going to talk about a different kind of calling than what we've been talking about, and that is a phone call. So
remember those?
I'm sorry?
Remember those?
Yeah. I know. I tried calling people the other day and nobody answers their phone ever.
That's funny. I do remember babysitting. One of the houses I babysat at had the round, I think they were called the rotary. And I just remember how long it took to have to call my house from their phone. Yeah. Like you get to the 9 or the 0 or whatever it was. You're like, oh my gosh.
And if you messed up one, you got to start over.
Yes.
Or you go halfway, remember?
Yeah. Kids would have no clue. They would think it was some sort of torture instrument in this age of immediate gratification.
Torture instrument. So we're going to call our little game with you today. Talk, call waiting, or just hang up. Scott, tell our audience who Brad will be competing for today.
Brad, you'll be competing for Jennifer Legarde, a.k.a. Library Girl, a teacher in Olympia, Washington. If you're able to answer 2 out of the 3 questions correctly, Jennifer will be awarded a free download of an album by the ridiculously popular edgy rock band Rockin' the Standards.
I sound like yes, Jen, we got this.
Okay.
I got a hernia saying it that time.
Yeah, we're going to have to send a medic over. Jen Lagarde and I, just a mini fun fact, she and I do a weekly Facebook live stream called Read This Now, where we book talk a book. So we are used to having shenanigans, and she will never let me down if I don't deliver here. So I am going to need to be on my telephone A game on this trivia.
All right, Brad, here we go with your first question. Remember, there's no Googling, no Google searches here. Question one, President John F. Kennedy made a profanity-laden phone call. We're not going to quote it right now. This is not an explicit show. But
good call. Good call.
That would become public to a general in which branch of the military? So he made a phone call to a general. And was that branch of the military A?
The Navy.
Or B?
The Air Force.
Or C?
The Coast Guard.
It's got to be B, the Air Force.
Yes, it is.
It is.
Why is that so obvious?
I'm just thinking to myself, so much could go wrong in the air. So it had to be that.
Well, actually,
what could go wrong in the water, right?
Yeah. Actually, it might not have been what was in the air, because the general was rumored to have dated Jackie before marrying her.
I didn't think about that angle, but okay.
That might have led to a little bit of anger, Tim. I'm just saying.
Yeah. It still counts as a point for Jen Lagarde, right?
Yeah, it does.
All right, we're on our way.
And that just blows my mind that you went straight to that one. Anyway, question number two. In November of 18, they didn't have phones, I don't believe, in the 18. In 1989, which famous CEO of a company that was doing millions and millions of dollars in sales at the time answered tech support calls for his company for 6 weeks? So this is a CEO that was answering the phone for tech calls. 6 weeks. Was it A?
Bill Gates, Microsoft CEO.
Was it B?
Steve Jobs, then Next Computer CEO.
Or was it C?
Jack Welch, General Electric CEO.
Okay. I'm going C, Welch.
Oh, that was a good try. But actually the answer was A, Bill Gates, believe it or not.
No, I believe it, because I was debating.
Yeah, and it was said that after he answered the calls, and by the way, he called himself William when he was doing the tech support, he said that he learned more about his company in those 6 weeks than in the previous 5 years.
Fascinating.
Yeah, very interesting.
Fascinating. That's cool.
Talk to your customers, right?
That's cool.
Yeah.
It reminds me of when I call school sometimes. You know, it's very interesting what happens, because a lot of schools will have the automated system at least to initially route you. But you want that to be a good experience for people too.
Yeah.
I digress.
It was a good digress. All right. Question number three. In 2016, which three famous people exchanged a call that was later in dispute that was focusing on giving permission for song lyrics? So three people giving permission for song lyrics. Was it A?
Ariana Grande, Taylor Swift, and Pete Davidson of SNL.
Or was it B?
Beyonce, Rihanna, and Jay-Z.
Or was it C?
Taylor Swift, Kanye West, and Kim Kardashian.
B. Be cool. Be cool and wait for my answer is what I was saying there.
That's what you were saying.
Yep. It's got to be C.
C, Taylor Swift, Kanye West, and Kim Kardashian. That is correct.
Yes! Oh, yeah. How did I know that?
By the way, those three are no longer besties, I heard.
Oh, I love that trivia. That's good stuff.
Yeah. So
telephone trivia.
Scott, how did Brad do today?
Good job, Brad. You got 2 out of 3 correct, and that's good enough to be a winner.
Woo! Woo!
Congratulations, Brad. You won absolutely nothing, but Jennifer, she just won a free download of Rockin' the Standards Education Rock and Roll Music for 2nd through 6th graders.
Jen, you owe me big time, Jen.
Yeah. All right, Brad, why don't you let our listeners know how they can follow up. I know your book is on Amazon, Twitter handles, websites, whatever you can give to people so they can learn more from you.
Sure, I'll do two quick things. So on Twitter, I'm at Gustafson Brad, and I'd be happy to learn from you, hear ideas, and connect. And then my website has lots of resources just to support learning. So if you do pick up the book, Reclaiming Our Calling, I have a tab on my website. It's bradgustafson.com, and there's actually quite a few free resources like staff meeting starters, questions for social media. There's a digital discussion guide with some bonus content, just fun stuff that I, as I was creating it, I thought, how would I want to learn and interact with other people around this book? So that's why it's there.
Hey, we'd like to thank our sponsor, Advancement Courses. We love those guys. Start planning your summer professional development with Advancement Courses. They offer over 200 online graduate level PD courses in 19 different subject areas for K-12 teachers just like Scott and me.
Yeah.
And because they're online and self-paced, you can take them anywhere, anytime, with up to 6 months to complete them. The courses are available for graduate credit through CAEP and regionally accredited university partners, or for continuing education units that meet your state requirements.
Tim, they're a terrific way to get your summer PD done. And the courses really focus on creating practical products that you can use in your classroom the next day or the next school year. Right now, our listeners can save 20% off each course, Tim, with the code BROS20. That's capital B, capital R, capital O, capital S, and then the number 20, BROS20. That's just $120 per graduate credit hour or $160 for 50 clock hours. So go to advancementcourses.com/bedley to learn more and use the coupon code BROS20. Get started on your summer PD today.
BROS20. Right on, bro.
Make it happen, peeps.
Don't forget to sign up for Global School Playday, globalschoolplayday.com. Join in the global movement to bring unstructured play back to the lives of our kids. So important for child development, isn't it, Scott?
Yeah, Tim, I was just seeing a recent statistic on research saying that when play is involved in learning, it takes 10 to 20 repetitions to remember something. Whereas without it, when it's just rogue memorization, it's like 400 something times you have to repeat just to remember it. Like, so you can flashcard your kids to death, or you can play a little while and have them learn along with you, which I think is hugely important for us to pay attention to the research as teachers. Use that to the best of our abilities to impact our kids the most we can while we have them.
Right on. All right, Dr. Gustafson, thank you so much again for being on the show.
We out. You guys are amazing. That was a lot of fun.
Thanks. It was fun. And hey, let your staff know about Advancement Courses. They can get that 10% discount, right?
I will. Do you guys have a link on your website too?
We don't have a website.
We do on our Facebook and all the other places. Okay. Yeah.
All right. And it'll be in the show notes as well.
Okay. Good deal.
Cool. So thanks for listening, everyone. But most of all, thanks for listening.
Hey, thanks, Mom and Dad.
Mom and
dinner done. Think I might change my name to Ron Bedley so I could be one of those Bedley brothers. Yeah. Bedley brothers, Bedley, Bedley brothers, bringing education information like no other. Bedley brothers, Bedley, Bedley brothers.